Moncrief on News Talk.
We're now a month into what is being called a ceasefire in Gaza, which you could be forgiven for thinking as simply a slightly reduced level of bloodshed. The hope, of course, was that this would assist the entrance of desperately needed aid into the area. John White is Acting Senior Deputy Director of UNRWA. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon, Sean.
So far, around 37,000 metric tons of aid has got in. Is that enough? Is it close to enough?
No, I mean, frankly, Sean, it's not. It might sound like a lot, and for sure it's better than it has been in during the period which gave rise to famine conditions in Gaza and other parts of the north. But as you can appreciate that, you know, something as serious as famine cannot be easily reversed. It can be reversed, but it takes huge amounts of aid at scale and the right types of aid. So, you know, before the war, 700 trucks a day used to come into Gaza. That's about 500 commercial, 200 humanitarian. In the last 4 days, we could say that about 1,500 trucks entered. So that's about, what, 300, 400? Half of those were commercial. So yes, there is an increased availability of food, but that's still less than half of what was going in before the war. And now we're trying to deal with the catastrophic effects of the war in terms of the damage, the physical destruction, the trauma to the population, people being displaced. 90% of people are now living outside of the homes that they've been forced to move from their homes at least once, and many on multiple occasions. So, you know, the amount of aid getting in while it's helping is not nearly what's needed.
Yeah. So why is there still a reduced and far less than what was going in before the war started? What's holding it up?
Well, Sean, what's holding it up is the amount that's being allowed in by the Israeli authorities. So they are the ones that control the entry of aid into Gaza through various entry points. UNRWA has 5,000 trucks, half of food, half of non-food items, essential, you know, winterization items cut for the upcoming winter, like tents, tarpaulins, clothes, shoes, everything you can imagine. We have everything that's needed to support this population, but we are simply not being allowed to bring it in ourselves. We're having to give it to other partners, and those partners are bringing it in as much as they are allowed and then distributing it.
Yeah. And do the partners even have, because they're trying to bring in their own aid, are there enough vehicles to do that?
I mean, that's a good question. Of course, the partners will prioritize their own supplies, and then they have been very supportive of UNRWA, given all of the challenges and obstacles that have been, you know, imposed on us and all the constraints that we are facing. But yes, you're right. They have to you know, look after their own supplies first and then bring whatever we have in then in addition to that and as much as is allowed.
And is it also the case, as I understand it, that you can hand your aid over to another agency, but it can't say UNRWA on the box or whatever?
So correct. I mean, that's part of the frustration that we've had to face, is that we have all of these supplies which were procured for more than a year ago. I mean, it's not just now that we're trying to get them in. We have been trying for more than 1 year to bring these supplies in. And of course, this predates the Knesset legislation, which is the basis for the Israelis refusing to allow any food parcels marked UNRWA, any medicines marked UNRWA, any tents marked UNRWA from entering. So we've had to go to huge trouble to debrand, cover over, remove our logo from all of these items, hundreds of thousands of items, as you can imagine. And so that's additional time, additional cost, additional inconvenience, and then having to hand them over to partners for them to try to bring in on our behalf.
But would it be fair to say, though, John, that even though UNRWA is officially banned by Israel, there are still hundreds, if not thousands, of UNRWA workers still on the ground in Gaza trying to help?
Of course. I mean, yes, the number of international staff, myself included, is relatively small. There's about 30 of us. But actually, the number of national staff on the ground is 12,000. So, you know, these are civil servants, international civil servants that have been, you know, working, part of a, you know, an international organization that have been working for years, if not decades, you know, and know how to do all of this. We showed back in January that when we are given the right conditions, allowed to bring our supplies in, allowed to distribute them, we can do so at scale to feed the population, to support the population equitably, fairly and efficiently without anyone dying.
Mm. Now, actually, because you did, and I suppose this, people might just think that the job of an agency like UNRWA is just to hand out food to people or tents to people. But you said there it's like a civil service. Could you explain a bit more about that?
Sure, of course. I mean, the mandate for UNRWA is to provide support for Palestine refugees in each of our five fields of operation. So not just Gaza, but also Lebanon, Syria, Jordan, the West Bank, as well as Gaza, in place of the host authority or the host government. So, you know, we run schools. So in Gaza, for example, we had about 300 schools, 180 schools, buildings, accommodating 300 schools running on double shifts, many of them, providing education, primary level education for 300,000 children. So we had 26 health centres providing primary healthcare services for 1.7 million registered refugees. You know, so we have what we have developed over 70 years is, you know, the kind of services that you or I would expect in Ireland, but these are for Palestinian refugees in countries where the host government is not in a position to provide those services.
As things stand now, the population in Gaza, I assume it's not evenly distributed across the strip, that they're kind of pushed into certain parts that are vaguely habitable.
Yeah, I mean, this is the tragic, one of the many tragic realities is that now this so-called safe humanitarian zone, which is not a term that was coined by the UN, but rather by the Israeli authorities, who now control militarily more than half of the Gaza Strip. So 2.1 million people who were previously in what was considered one of the most densely populated areas in the world is now squeezed into half that space. So less than half that space. And so UNRWA, as well as other agencies, are trying to reconfigure our services so as to deal with this reality. You know, we cannot no longer access many of the installations that are now under military, in areas under military control. So we're having to now try and repair, rehabilitate our schools, our health centres, to set up new medical points in the areas where people are now staying in huge numbers to try and continue service delivery and sustain our supports to those people.
Yeah. And would that be mostly around the coast people are?
Yeah. So, I mean, so basically it's a now, the whole Israeli military control has been extended inside the Gaza Strip on the north, on the east and on the south. So forcing everybody towards the west, towards the sea.
Yeah. Now, there's food, there's education, also because there are virtually no buildings left as shelter and the winter is coming. Are there enough resources to kind of shelter people properly?
Again, what I've mentioned is that we have thousands of tents. We had almost a quarter of a million tarpaulins. We have all of these supplies stuck outside, which we have been working to bring in. Other agencies are trying to bring in their supplies, but they are not coming in at the level or scale that's needed. Now, they were handed out previously, but you can imagine if people have been uprooted and had to resettle multiple times due to military evacuation orders, due to displacements from north to south to middle, and, you know, people just don't know where they're going. But also the tents and the tarpaulins, the sheeting that they have to try and protect themselves from the oncoming winter, I mean, what they have is now in tatters. You know, it doesn't last. And so we need to replace, we need to scale it all up. Kids don't have shoes. We have thousands of shoes outside that we are trying to bring in. We are giving them to other partners to bring in on our behalf because people need all of this if they're going to get through this winter and try and avoid another public health catastrophe. Our medical teams now at the moment are just starting another round of polio vaccination campaigns to try and again address this, another, you know, disease which was unheard of in Gaza since 40, 50 years. So, you know, again, under less than ideal circumstances, our health teams are scaling up, working with other agencies to try and make sure that the whole population can be vaccinated over three occasions over 3 months to try and ward off this fatal disease.
Yeah. Now, obviously, as we've discussed already, UNRWA is kind of persona non grata as far as the Israelis are concerned. Other agencies, are they feeling any degree of pressure as well?
Look, of course, the whole UN system is under, you know, is in a sense being sort of undermined and sidelined. You know, there's new structures that are being set up at different times. You had the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. Now you have the Civil Military Cooperation Center, which is trying to, again, a new iteration that's trying to somehow can manage the distribution of humanitarian assistance in Gaza. But the people who are organizing and managing this have not been to Gaza themselves. They're doing it from outside of Gaza. And instead, we have UNRWA as, you know, as an organization with 12,000 people with 75 years of experience that are able to, you know, trusted by the community. We have the resources, we have the capacity, we have the warehouses, we have the distribution, we have the logistics staff to do all of this. And all we are asking is that we be allowed to do it. And the ICJ has recently passed an advisory opinion, which has validated UNRWA's role, vindicated us in terms of these baseless accusations that were levelled against us, has confirmed that we are indispensable as part of the delivery of humanitarian services, and has emphasised that UNRWA has to be allowed to implement its mandate. We are just asking to be allowed to do so.
Yeah. There's little chance of the Israeli government acceding to that, though, is there?
It's not a binding opinion, but we expect it to go forward to the General Assembly in the next week or two and to be adopted, and that this then has a moral force. OK, beyond that, yes, we have to see what the Israel and other, you know, international actors are willing to do. And obviously there is now an upcoming conference in Egypt at the end of the month, looking at the whole reconstruction of Gaza. And there's a lot of questions, more questions than answers in terms of what shape that will take.
Yeah. Now, and on that question, given that there was, you know, 200 aid trucks a day going in there before any of this started, presumably that whole process has been put back years, if not decades, that for the for the foreseeable future, is this just an ongoing crisis?
It's hard to see it being otherwise unless things are dramatically scaled up. OK, so imagine your life and the home that you go home to in the evening and all the things that you have. Imagine all of that's taken away and you have a tent and barely the belongings around you that you need to get by from one day to the next. So how do you bridge that gap? You bridge that gap with a stable ceasefire, a political solution, unrestricted humanitarian aid at scale, and some sort of political resolution or framework to actually help Gaza to be rebuilt for the people, to try and, you know, help them to recover some semblance of or fraction of what they've lost.
John, thanks a million for speaking with us today. That was John White there, Acting Senior Deputy Director of UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for Palestine. A few comments on that. Surely in international law, not allowing vital humanitarian aid must count as breaking the rules of modern warfare. I think that judgment has been arrived at already. Why are there no penalties for this? They have been knowingly starving people as a result of this dance. Because the usual is in international things that the ICJ, as John mentioned there, the UN, they don't have any legal ability to compel Israel to do anything. It's, you know, the Court of International Opinion, which hasn't been that efficient up till now. Anyway, international pressure seems to have fallen off a cliff since the ceasefire. Is it making it even harder to get aid into Gaza? Well, as you heard there, some is getting in. Nothing, about half of what was going in before this war started. So it's nowhere near what they need. So I suppose to a certain extent, because there's a ceasefire now and the eyes of the world looks in a slightly different direction, which is part of the reason why we wanted to talk to John today. Another text that says it's important to also point out that Israel is not allowing nutritional food items in. There are a lot of reports of high fat, high sugar food items going in, loaded in calories, but very damaging in terms of reversing the health effects of starvation. It stops the people looking gaunt, but does not meet their nutritional needs at all. And finally, someone else says the population of Gaza is about 2.1 million, minus at least 100,000, and the death rate is far exceeding the birth rate. The safe zone, in inverted commas, is completely encircled by the IDF, who pushed the Gazan border because of buffer zones. So I assume from that you're saying they're just squeezing the amount of people left into a smaller and smaller area. Gosh.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.